Vítajte pri prvom tak určite podcaste v roku 2021 a na začiatok dovolte, aby som vám za celú našu redakciu písalkov zaželal, aby ten rok nový bol pre vás lepší ako ten, ktorý sme tak radi všetci hodili za hlavu. Budeme sa snažiť k tomu prispieť aj my na začiatok nového roka, prvý kvartál, možno prvý pol rok pripravíme viaceré zmeny na tak určite SK, ktoré by mali rezultovať aj vo viac podcastov. Nechcem ale teraz hovoriť viac, ale tak snáď čoskoro zistíte, čo som mal práve teraz na mysli. Jednou z nových vecí, ktorým sa nebudeme vyhýbať, je zapojenie angličtiny. Jednak do článkov a potom aj zrejme niekedy aj na podcasty, ako práve v tomto prvom prípade pre podcast roku 2021. Máme špeciálneho hostia, keďže Zoom urobil svet znova o čosi menším, tak som oslovil Briana Curtisa, editora na webovej stránke theringer.com, čo je vlastne moja asi najobľúbenejšia športová stránka za posledné roky. Brian Curtis je takisto hostiteľom podcastu The Press Box podcast, ktorý vyhral môj personálny hitlist za rok 2020 na Spotify. Keď mi to zoradilo podcasty podľa počúvanosti, tak ten, ktorý som počúval dvakrát každý týždeň, lebo vydávajú dve epizódy, tak sa umiestnil úplne na čele. Som veľmi rád, že Brian prijal toto pozvanie, že sme si sa porozprávali v posledný deň minulého roku, takže sme sa trochu aj pozreli na to, čo bolo za nami a aj na to možno, čo nás ešte iba čaká. Je to podcast zameraný v podstate na americké reálie, na americké médiá, na americké športy. Takže ak vás to baví, budem rád, keď si to vypočujete. A hovorím, nebránime sa, že podobne English speaking guests, anglicky hovoriaci hostia budú aspoň sporadicky aj do tak určite podcastu pribúdať. Tak teraz prepnem do angličtiny a do počutia. Okay, so today we have a very special guest. It's actually a first English-speaking guest to a first Slovak sports podcast, tak určite podcast, Brian Curtis. Brian Curtis is an editor-at-large for The Ringer, a sports and pop culture website and podcast network, which became part of a European Spotify earlier in 2020. Prior to The Ringer, you worked with Bill Simmons for Grantland at ESPN, and some of the stops of your journalistic career included The New Yorker, The New York Times, Sports Illustrated, all the brand names. And most of all, you are the host of the Sports and Media Press Box podcast, which placed first on my Spotify chart for 2020. So I will not try to be too big of a fanboy. Thank you, Brian, for taking your time today and for an international interview of sorts. I don't know how many of those of those you do.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good. We are recording at the last day of the dreaded 2020. So let me start by asking you, how did your life as a media member change in the last year?
Well, I'm on the very lucky end of the spectrum. You know, I still have a job. My family's safe and healthy. And, you know, I was still able to do work that I was proud of and that I was happy and overjoyed to do from home, even with a couple of kids crawling all over me as they tried to do school remotely from their bedrooms. But, I think personally it was, you know, I have nothing to complain about. I wouldn't even venture a complaint. For the rest of the industry, it was terrible. And for sports writing in particular, which is obviously something I'm very interested in, it was awful in the United States.
We'll get there in a little bit. I was just planning to interrupt by asking you, when were you last in the office?
Gosh, that's a great question. February.
Oh, really?
I came back from the Super Bowl in February, and I think I did one of those, hey, I'm back, you know, office visits. And I think that's the last time I saw any of my colleagues.
Okay. Since then, there were actually three pretty big moments for The Ringer. First, the sale to Spotify, which happened just before the pandemic hit the United States. And then the Black Lives Matter movement. Which affected your workplace or the work that you do the most?
Spotify transition's been just fantastic, you know? So I think that's, you know, largely we've been doing almost everything we've done before the transition, after the transition. So that's been good. You know, the protest movement it's affected my life, I think, mostly on a commentary level, you know, in terms of directly, right? Like, so how do we cover this? You know, how do we think about this movement, and how do we find guests for the press box that we want to come on and talk about it, and sort of provide insight on that? And that's been a really just interesting process over the last several months.
Did you have time to reflect on a year of change for you, and how do you feel about it compared to, like, let's say what you set out a year ago at the beginning of 2020?
Yeah, I didn't think I'd be at home this much. Yeah, it's funny with 2020, right? Because on the one hand, you want to reflect, and on the other hand, you just want it to be done and stop and go away. I think the real question, and I'm sure you have a version of this in your head too, is how long are we going to be in this mode? The calendar is about to change, but are we going to do this for another 3-4 months before we're all vaccinated, or are we going to do this for the foreseeable future?
Well, I'm afraid I'm afraid in my country, we did pretty well in the first wave of coronavirus. We had basically like zero deaths and very few cases, but now it's very bad. Like we didn't do necessary things, and vaccination will be, I guess slower. Nobody expects for life to be back to normal before the fall, really, in Europe. So I guess we have still some time to stay home.
Exactly, right? And that sort of affects how you think about the year, because if we can think about it as a contained, awful, strange thing that then sort of, you know, more or less goes away, that's one thing. But if we think of it as the new normal for this unclear period of time, man, that is really, really depressing.
Do you consider yourself more a sports or a media journalist? Because you do a sports media podcast.
I think if somebody came up to me on the street and said, "What do you do for a living?" I'd be happier to say I'm a sports writer, because that just sounds cooler than I host a media podcast. Right. But, you know, it's funny with podcasting is so many more people just hear that, and so many different kinds of people, present company included, just hear it. So I guess people probably think of me as the latter probably more now than anything.
Yeah. I spoke actually to like the top Slovak announcer. He's a soccer announcer. I think it was in May or in June, but just when soccer in Europe started again, and he was used to working, you know, from the studio in Bratislava. They don't travel to every big game, so they are used to remote announcing, and even he said he felt like he was at the funeral, you know, with no edit. Voices or whatever sounds, the sound effects. So he was very stressed out, I would guess. Who, in your opinion, whose life changed the most? Was it the beat writer, the TV announcer, or maybe a columnist? I guess you guys didn't feel as much change, but I guess the beat writer or a TV announcer in America, whose life changed most since March?
I would say probably the beat writer of those two. Because the announcers, certainly, like you said, sometimes they had to do it remotely. Maybe they were already doing it remotely. They also sort of surf on the crowd, almost like a surfboard, right? The crowd goes up here and their voice goes way up here. But beat writers, you know, they had a lot of their tools taken away from them. A lot of cases, they can't go to the game, still aren't going to NBA games, which just started here, right? They're in a lot of cases, they're not allowed in the locker room. So their relationship with players has changed completely. I mean, there's a lot of NBA players, Laker beat writers, who would see LeBron James face-to-face after every single game and had a personal relationship with him, where after he talked to the rest of the press, they could kind of go up and say, "Hey, look, give me a few things that you didn't give everybody else." That's actually a huge part of American sports writing. They're not allowed to do that anymore. So that really changed.
And how they adapted? Is there a noticeable difference in their writing or maybe in announcing?
That's what's so interesting to me, because as somebody who allegedly should know this, I read the paper, read online every day, and I'm like, now what's different? What exactly has changed? And, you know, I think it's one of those things, you probably see it in the long haul more, because they get things, right? They accumulate things. Some things they can't print right away or don't want to print right away, but it turns into stories down the line. I think we'll probably sort of understand what the effect of that is in a couple of months or even a couple of years.
COVID-induced changes in the life of journalists are here to stay. I know that I've heard, I guess you guys were discussing that New York Times They work from home until the end of the year, so I guess they're still working from home. Will they ever travel to as many games as before? And will the announcers ever travel to games other than maybe, you know, the Super Bowls and or the NFL or like the local announcers who are working now basically from home?
So there's two parts to that question, right? One is that somehow in the pandemic, we've been working from home and we've just figured out new ways to work. And we say, oh, we can do this as easily or as cheaply as we could do the other thing. So let's actually change our practices. The second part of that is when these media companies come back after the pandemic, whenever that is, they just won't have as much money as they did beforehand. The New York Times probably being the one exception to that rule. So they'll say, oh, by the way, you can't get on that plane. And it's not a health reason anymore. It's because we lost a year plus worth of advertising income or whatever it is. And we're not allowed, and we just don't have the funds to do that. So I actually think that's an interesting multi-part question. On the kind of practices part, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would sort of, I'm going to guess that it's going to bounce back quite a bit to the way it was as soon as it's fully healthy to do that, if that ever happens, right? I think, you know, because you look at the way campaign reporters were reporting on the presidential campaign here at the end, I think it was pretty close to what they would be doing in a normal year. They didn't see Joe Biden as much, but they were on planes, they were at rallies, wearing masks, they were talking to voters. They were doing the kinds of things they should do, you know, that they would normally do, I should say. But so I kind of think the practices will most about, I think it's actually funny. You mentioned TV. I think TV is going to change a lot. Because one thing I've heard from producers is whenever they did interviews, they always wanted to have their guy in front of a camera and they wanted it to look really crisp and really expensive and really good. Well, now we've all gotten used to what you and I are doing right now, which is a Zoom call. And I think a lot of TV people are like, maybe people at home really don't care that it looks like $1 million every time they turn on TV. Maybe this is just good enough. So why don't we think about doing that?
Yeah. Different sports leagues in America handled the pandemic and all the things that were associated with it in a different way. Could you compare them? Like who did the best job? Who basically didn't do as good a job? And do you follow Premier League? And can you maybe compare it to the situation over there in London or in Great Britain? I know you did travel to London on occasion.
To talk to the sports writers there, yeah. I mean, I think the answer to that is probably incomplete, right? Because we don't actually have a full season yet. I always said this with the NBA when everybody is declaring victory at the beginning. It's like, let's talk after the NBA finals. let's just slow down. And I think that's the case with the NFL because on the one hand, the NFL's had lots of positive cases. They've had lots of games that were moved a couple of days, but they mostly played their schedule. Well, now the Cleveland Browns, you know, have this massive COVID problem and may not be able to play the game they need to play on Sunday. So I don't know. I kind of give everybody an incomplete, and it's totally different circumstances, right? Basketball was able to do a bubble because they were at the end of their season and they could shrink down the number of teams.
Football hockey did the bubble.
Hockey did the bubble. Football has the advantage they only have to travel once a week, unlike the NBA or MLB, which is traveling multiple times a week. It's one of these, it all feels very apples and oranges, but I would say the NBA with their bubble obviously did the job incredibly well early in the year.
You did write about it early in the year. What do you feel when you like now today or last week when you saw that there's 15 or 20,000 classic Zoom, 15 or 20,000 people inside of a Dallas football stadium right now? Because they were there. We get queasy. The football games and there was some Iowa State game with somebody, I guess, and then it really, we are so used to in Europe, like there's no fans. Mm-hmm. And like you don't expect fans when you watch like soccer from Great Britain or anything really. You don't expect fans, and now we get the NFL or the college games, and there are people in the stands. Like,
it is, and it feels like this weird illustration of America where you have both individual people and also business owners who are defying medical advice and saying, of course we're going to have fans here. Of course I'm going to go to a football game. Why would I let my, you know, sort of life be interrupted in this way? And, you know, look, I think some of them, they've figured out the capacity so they can do it safely or let's say relatively safely. But I don't know. It's funny, fan shots. I think I said this on Bill Simmons' podcast the other day. Fan shots have never been a controversial part of television. You show the fans and they're cheering or they're nervous or they're mad or whatever. And now I look at it, it's like harrowing. I'm going, whoa. Did that person be there? Are they wearing their mask the right way?
Are they? Yeah. Are they taking the camera away quickly enough so we don't see that they're not wearing the mask yet?
Exactly.
I promise the last pandemic question. Were there any pandemic sports winners other than Michael Jordan and maybe golf?
No. Yeah, The Last Dance, golf. Yeah. What's a winner? That's a good one. I mean, I played and watched so much
golf as never before.
Are you familiar with cornhole? Is that a thing?
It's not obvious. Not really. No.
You know, you take bean bags. This is like a parking lot sport in America. Okay. At football games, you take bean bags and you throw it into a wooden thing that has a hole.
Okay.
So there were lots of little sports leagues like that. So there is actually a cornhole professional league here, such as the United States.
I can't imagine.
Those things that when there was no sports, they suddenly got on ESPN a lot. They're like, oh, we're still playing. Oh, we can do this safely. You haven't brought basketball back, but cornhole is still going on. So they got all this attention that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. Very funny.
Okay. Well, we enjoyed Michael Jordan documentary even over here. So it was a great relief.
It was amazing.
Let's look ahead a little bit. I have a question. Who will be writing about sports in America in like 3 to 5 years? Because I think, isn't podcasting really taking away writing talent the same way maybe the TV drained the pool? Like, I don't mind listening to you guys twice a week, but maybe I would like to read one more article from you a week, which I know that you're not able to do because you have a podcast.
I wrote something today, so I'm proud of myself for doing that. It's an interesting tension, right? I mean, I think the first goal, and I just speak for Brian Curtis here, not for The Ringer, but just the first goal as an industry is to stay solvent at all. So, you know, you think, what can we do? You know, and it is that podcasting, is that a combination of podcasting and writing? But I'm with you. I'm still very pro words. I like words. I like writing. That's still my favorite thing to do. And, you know, I think it's interesting because I think there's a happy life where you do both. And you sort of figure out how to do both. And of course, they're in tension, right? Because you only have so many hours in the day. You only have so many hours to do everything. But to me, it's funny, just as on a personal level, just figuring that out. Okay, how much time do I need to do a podcast? That's not David and I stammering at each other for an hour. And how many, you know, but how much time do I also need to write and report? Because it's one thing to sit down and bang out on the keyboard, right? It's another thing to actually call people, schedule interviews, do that kind of thing. And if once the world changes to travel. So I hope I have a chance to do both. That's what I want to do with my life.
Do you think like podcasting in the long run can be the digital paywall, for example? Because I'm speaking from our experience in Slovakia, we're pretty far ahead and people are used to pay for digital content, but not for podcasts. I mean, I don't think many of them are like getting much of an advertising revenue. Because maybe we are a little slow on that part because they are slow developing. I mean, my sports podcast is the first sports podcast in Slovakia. It's only 4 years old. But I mean, you know, there are a couple of companies that are, who are digital. They have digital paywall and people are really, they don't mind paying a small monthly fee for journalism.
Yeah, I think it feels funny at this stage in history because it's almost like paying for radio. You know, you think, well, I just turn on the radio. I don't have to put in a quarter to do this. I don't have to swipe my credit card. Maybe we'll get to that point where that makes more sense. But right now, there's something about podcasting, even though it is now blowing up as an industry and all that stuff, that it feels, I don't know, it feels like you're talking to your friends, right? I think good podcasts sound like you want to be with those people because you imagine that they're your friends. And you want to be with them twice a week. You want to hear what they have to say. You want to hear them talk to each other. You want to hear them make fun of each other, that kind of thing. And I don't know if that just makes it seem weird to have to pay for that differently than paying for a formal journalistic article. I don't know. But it feels like at this point in history, it kind of does.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And I attest. I have many friends at The Ringer.
Me too. Which I don't see. I see as much as you do nowadays because we don't see it.
What is the big audience for an article and versus maybe the podcast in the US? This is something that's,
you know, I don't I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a very different, I'm sure you've experienced this too. It's a very different relationship. I mean, people just feel much more personally about you with a podcast because they just feel like, I don't know. They just feel like if I'm just looking at my Twitter reactions for an article versus a podcast, it's just completely, it's not even the volume that's different. It's just the nature of them that's completely different. They're just, the ones are like, hey, Brian, da 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 da. Nobody responds to me like that after an article. It's also frightening how much you reveal about yourself when you talk. Again, I'm sure you have this experience. Even if you're doing interviews and proper, I'm not saying they're like talking about my dreams on the press box, but stuff just kind of slips out over the course of an hour. And it's terrifying, because when as a writer, I'm always very protective of how much am I revealing here? How much do people care about me? And I suspect very, very, very little. So, but on podcasting, it is kind of about you to some extent. I don't know.
You are part of the product. I mean, you're not the part of the product. You are just the one putting it together. But in podcasting, you are one half, or maybe sometimes.
I know.
Do you think gambling money will save the industry, like the sports journalism industry in America? Because over here, I think it works pretty well. I mean, I guess there are, I mean, the betting companies are major, advertisers, and they really don't care, like, who creates content as long as there is content that's relevant for the betting audience.
Yeah, so I think when it's going to be this huge infusion of ad money, which we've already seen on television and we're starting to see in print. The second part of that is too, and there was a good article in the Washington Post about this here the other day about sports writers going to work for gambling companies, which I think has already happened in the UK and other places. You know, you sort of leave the Chicago Tribune and you go, like, I'm going to go write for gamblingcompany.com.
Yeah.
So, and again, in a kind of terrifying period like this professionally, I guess that's an option. It's something.
Okay. I have five rapid questions at the end, because
let's do it.
Stick to the, to the time frame. How much money do you pay for sports content each month for paywall, or for newsletters? Like, can you pull it off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, I would say somewhere between, the New York Times is really expensive on paper. That's like my biggest, that's probably the most expensive, one of the most expensive things I buy all year other than food. So I would say it's probably like more than $20 and, gosh, I'm trying to think. I think it's probably less than $100, but it's probably maybe $50 to $100 if we're including the New York Times.
The print New York Times?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm getting just the digital over here, of course, and it's worth it. But absolutely. It's not that much. I mean, it's not that much.
The most important subscription I have to anything.
Okay. What will be more important for a sports journalist in 2021, to have their own Substack or to be working for a brand, like an ESPN or SI or The Ringer?
I still think the latter, just because of the size of the audience and also because of wonderful things like health benefits and salary and the support. And also, by the way, just like editing and the support of your colleagues. Now, again, I don't blame anybody who does Substack, because again, anything you do right now is a great idea. If you can stay in the industry, I support that. But I like working for a company and I like working for a publication. And that's I identify myself a lot of ways as a Ringer person as much as anything. So yeah, I think the latter.
And what will be more important, access to the locker room, which now there is none, or access to the DM on social networks for athletes or people who need to be part of the story?
I think it might be the latter in 2021, just because you're not going to be in the locker room for a long time. So you're going to be having, I mean, it's funny, if you tell me social media plus Zoom calls, which is now how we do all the post-game interviews. Yeah, I think that'll be bigger in 2021.
Okay. We in Slovakia, we do care about ice hockey and soccer. But what are the current power rankings of sports in their popularity in the US? And maybe who is on the upswing and who is fading?
Football, and then down, blank space. All right, we're still going. Still haven't hit number two yet. And then I guess it really depends on how you'd rank the NBA and the MLB. And there's sort of, I guess the NBA, I mean, MLB has 162 games a year. So it's just a lot of stuff. And then, and with soccer coming on very strong, I think, in the United States, it just amazes me. I'm from the kind of pre-soccer generation in America, right? But it just amazes me how big soccer fandom has become and how important that's become a lot of people's identity. And then we probably get to hockey. Or actually, you know, does college football count separately? Because that was probably that'd probably be number two.
It's the football. Okay.
There we go.
So football, college, Sunday football, Saturday football.
Every variety of football. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So one final question before I let you go. What international sports event are you looking forward most to attend post-pandemic?
So I've made a couple trips to Australia, and I have not seen enough Aussie rules football in person for my taste. I did do a little cricket when I was in Australia last time. That I'd like to see more of. And I don't know when I'm in Slovakia next. I'm hoping for the grand tour. You know.
No problem. I mean,
for a personal tour of Slovakia's board.
We can do Slovakia. We can do Prague, Budapest, and Vienna in like 2 days because it's all nearby. So.
Okay, fantastic. I'm booking my tickets right now for 2022.
Are they fundable?
Yeah, we're gonna get flexible booking, right?
So okay.
Make sure.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Brian. It was Brian Curtis from The Ringer. Thank you very much for your time, and hopefully, you know, maybe at some other time post pandemic, I'll call again and we can speak about like is a sports post pandemic what we thought it was going to be?
Yeah, how many of those predictions actually were worth anything? Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.